KPCA LP, Petaluma, California. Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas. I'm co-hosting with Jason Davies and Janice Peter Thompson. And happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday. Good morning, Petaluma.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Yeah. And what do you have to report, Janice? You always have something to report.
Oh, let's see. What do I have to report? Oh, I'm going to just talk about my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is on hospice. And it's just so interesting watching the difference between my parents and my mother-in-law. And yesterday it gave you joy to watch her chewing on ice and kind of coming out of the sleeping and smiling and looking at people and then going back relaxing and sleeping. So it's a sad time, but it's a joyous time watching somebody at the end of life having enjoyment just chewing on ice and having family around. Yeah, so and I'm going to shout out to my sister-in-law, Mary, for being here for the last 4 weeks. She hasn't eaten in 4 weeks. Mm. So it's a changing time.
It's a hard thing to watch.
It's a hard thing to watch, but you have to find some joy in it because watching her chew that ice was really joyful, and it sounds crazy, but she smiled. It was nice.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same position watching my JT as he deteriorates. Going up to feed him and
it's a part of life, but it's
a part of life. But he's comfortable, and that's I understand what you're saying. The joy in seeing that they're comfortable and it's an awful thing to watch, but they're comfortable,
right? And well taken care of, and that's a good thing.
What's up with you, Jason?
Oh well, it's been a busy week. Looking forward to the weekend. We've got the Butter and Egg Days parade happening. And my kids are going to be playing in the marching band.
Great.
Like they do every year. So that's always fun to watch. And, I was just speculating maybe sometime in the future we could have a goal of having a car-free Butter and Egg Day parade, you know, just to do our part for GHG reduction. Yes.
I ran across a picture last week of Butter and Egg Day, I'm going to guess about 10 years ago, maybe, with a picture of your son.
Oh, yeah.
A little boy then.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, the guy's, I'm pretty sure he's going to be taller than me in a matter of months. So, kids grow fast. That's funny.
Yes, they do, and so do we.
I noticed.
Grow which way?
What's that?
Well, speaking of growing, since you mentioned growing, there is an article in today's Argus Courier. This is online, so this might have appeared in yesterday's news. I'm not sure. But hot in Petaluma, marijuana goes mainstream. And it's all about, it's a little article about a new farm, hot farm, that was approved. Just talking about how much revenue there could be from it. And the idea of, well, in California, it's total sales of $2.5 billion in marijuana. The first quarter of 2018, it was $60.9 million. Second quarter was $74.2. Third quarter, $100.8. Fourth quarter, $103.3 million. Total revenue, $345.2 million. There's money to be made there.
Becoming the norm, also.
Yeah. So this is the this is a little bit controversial. Of course, some people that were in the neighborhood didn't really want it there, but the county did approve it. So that's an interesting article. You can go see that on Petaluma 360. And other than that, I was also pleased to see that the Trump administration is reevaluating their position on opening our offshores to oil drilling. One of the things that's cited in the article is their concerns about the legal challenges it would face. Because, as you know, our states and our representatives have been very strongly opposing any effort by the Trump administration to open off our offshore for drilling. So that's that is a combination of kind of local and national news, but that's also in the paper today. And there was a multi-car crash today, which is really scary when I think about my kids driving.
Are you talking about the one yesterday morning near the Lakeville exit?
It says Thursday. Oh, you're right. Thursday, April 25th. So, yeah, this happened yesterday. Yeah. Really sad. Fortunately, no one was killed. 11-year-old girl was injured, but it was a minor.
Well, my daughter called this morning. She went to Sacramento. She was in Davis, and she was going back. And there was this, like, large vehicle that just slammed right into the exit, cement wall. And so she called me because she called 911, and then she called me, and she said it was the weirdest thing. This guy gets out of the car, and he takes his bags, and he's walking away, and every air pack deployed.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting.
So maybe we'll have fewer accidents as the onset of AI-driven cars happens. They have more autonomous vehicles. They're a bit smarter. They're not distracted by, texting and things like that, conversations. They pay attention. And in theory, it will reduce accidents. So, interesting.
We hope.
Well, statistically, it will. There'll be other questions, though, with AI, because here's the one I always come up with is, what is the goal of the AI-driven car? Is the car wanting to protect itself? Is it going to protect the pedestrian? Is it going to protect the driver? It has to make split-second decisions. Does it hit a pedestrian to save the car and the driver? I don't know. These are some ethical questions that come up with AI.
Yeah.
So.
Well, because I went to a forum. It was Know Before You Grow, and it was at the library.
Yeah.
And there were three. There was an artist there. No, there was planners there. And so they were just talking about traffic and transportation, but also the, Google cars, were part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really interesting, conversation, and I think it's going to come sooner than later. So we're going to have to start preparing for it.
Yeah. And another thing we're going to be preparing for is some new principals, I guess. We're having, there's three principals that are leaving the Petaluma schools. In fact, Petaluma High, where my kids go, are going to be losing David Sturott, who's, I think he's, been a good principal. He's there was some controversy over the Ulabel site's mic muting incident, but otherwise I think he's been a pretty good principal. Anyway, so there's going to be some changes for leadership in some of our schools. Hopefully that'll all be good. A few articles.
Yeah, one other thing is in the letters to the editor in the Argus, there is still controversy about the shelter operation, and I wish the old group would just allow the new group to move on.
Yeah.
And we need some peace, and the letters have just been vicious, and also on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I want to shout out to Sherry Cardo for her great letter to the editor.
She did a great one.
She did a really good one, and the bitterness is not good for the community, for the animals.
A lot of divisive things going on in this community.
Well, there is, and it's a sign of the time.
On the positive side, there's a really nice editorial called Butter and Eggs and Pot and Beer End. And this is all about, it's talking about Butter and Egg Days. It talks about our history as an agricultural center and dairy and eggs and things. And it talks about beer, and then it talks about this new craft commodity, which is marijuana. So at the end of it, it tells the reader that it says, Petaluma voters overwhelmingly approved legalizing recreational pot, and there is clearly a market here for cannabis. The city won't get much revenue from a cannabis business tax off one delivery service, but opening up a multiple dispensaries could give the city's ailing budget a boost if future voters approve such a tax. And it says Mayor Teresa Barrett also said during the campaign last year that she was willing to revisit the ordinance that bans cannabis dispensaries. And then it says, now would be a good time to start that conversation, especially as legal marijuana has had a chance to take root and has gained mainstream acceptance. And the final conclusion is embracing the cannabis industry in Petaluma could provide a much-needed economic stimulus, infusing the city with entrepreneurs and capital and creating jobs. As we celebrate the heritage of our economic past, let's keep an eye on our economic future. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
So things have come a long way.
Yes, they have.
And even on an editorial front, because I remember, you know, this was a bit more controversial only just a few years ago.
That's right.
Progress.
Anyway. And so turning back to the Butter and Egg Day Parade, I want to congratulate Scott Hess and John Sheehy, who are the Good Egg awardees this year.
Yeah,
thank you.
And we actually have Scott Hess with us here today. Welcome, Scott.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for being here. Yes, yes. So tell us a little bit about Scott. We all, the three of us know you, but there's a lot of people out there that don't know much about you. You're a native here, Petaluma, yes?
No, I'm not a native.
You're
I moved here in 85.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay, I didn't know that. Well,
so now we've got to rewind.
You were here when I got here in 91, so.
Take us back. Where'd you come from?
I came from upstate New York, near Rochester, New York.
Oh, and that must have been why you were able to attend the Woodstock
concert.
Well, I had lived in a couple of other places before that, but I was living on Cape Cod when Woodstock came.
So we just learned that before the show, that he was actually at Woodstock. So we have somebody in our studio now that was actually at Woodstock. That's pretty
cool. Yeah, I arrived just as the fences went down.
Oh, so
walked right in.
They gave up trying to charge
people
to get in.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Did you get muddy?
A little bit, but I held my ground. I didn't want to give up my fifth row seat.
Did you did you avoid the brown acid? Because I heard that was bad.
I did. I had my own.
Nice answer.
That's a good one.
Anyway, Scott Hess, as if not everybody knows, is an amazing photographer. And even if you haven't met or even seen Scott Hess, I'm sure you've seen his work. It's all over the place.
Yeah. In fact, it's on our website.
It's on our website.
It's on our website, InsidePetaluma.com.
So all of these amazing pictures of Petaluma that we see in the surrounding areas are done by Scott Hess. And tell us about how you started getting into photography. When did that happen?
Probably about my first year in college, and I took a course on how to develop film and make prints in college. But I started about then, and so that was my first dip into it. Started photographing the races at Watkins Glen, the very first thing. Those pictures don't look very good. Then I went to Europe with a friend of mine, who turned out to be head of the Guggenheim Museum for 20 years.
Wow.
From my classmate from upstate New York, Tom Krenz. So I went to Europe and started really photographing there that summer. I kind of switched on my photo brain. And then I went in and out of it over years and finally really, then I was off on a spiritual thing in India and stuff. And I came back, when I was pretty much out of circulation. When I came back, I came as a photographer and started working for South Florida Magazine and stuff.
So was that your first professional gig as a photographer?
My first job?
Yeah.
I also painted cars and airplanes.
Okay. But this was your first job? This was your first job, though, as a photographer?
Yeah, in 85, yeah. Okay. Pretty much focused on it. They like my photos in Miami and South Florida Magazine there. I just walk the streets and take pictures, and I like that.
Well, you have a real eye for photography. We were talking about this earlier. I mean, a lot of it is there's the gear, but just being able to frame an image in an artful way, you seem to have a knack for it.
Yeah, it's kind of mysterious. Well, I'm from Rochester, New York. That's the home of Eastman Kodak, you know.
Oh,
so Murray.
Okay.
Murray
Rockowitz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Both from Rochester, New York.
Huh.
Interesting.
George Eastman was woven all through my family history. You know, people work for him, my relatives and stuff.
You probably have a whole bunch of cameras. Do you have a particular one that's your go-to tool?
I have a DH. I just have the latest Nikon, usually.
Okay.
The best. And, you know, I keep a couple back in case I need them. But, yeah, the dynamic range keeps getting better and better, you know. Pictures are
So you're using digital, or you?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
You have switched from analog.
In 2007, I switched.
So Scott and John Sheehy, who I actually went to high school with, did a book, and it's called On a River Winding Home, Stories and Visions of the Petaluma River Watershed. So how did you and John connect to do this book?
Well, I started it. I started, and Karen did a nice design and stuff, and I put pictures and folders and categories. But then as it got further along, I saw I'm not going to be able to land. I wanted to go have more story. I wanted more history, and I didn't have time to. I liked history, and I knew the rough outlines, but I know Sheehy would really dig in, and he is from here. And we seemed to get along well. A couple of years ago, or two or three years ago, I reached out to him, and he was instantly, I think he wanted to do something similar. Except the concept of putting contemporary photos with historical stories was new. Usually you put historical photos with historical stories.
But right.
We just didn't even want to put one historical photo, really, to bring it so you can have that sense of present, you know, combined with the past.
I mean, it's a beautiful book, and well done, and it seems like the two of you just were the perfect coupling to make this happen.
I think so. It was great. Our meetings were really fun. We just talk about these stories and images. Yeah, it was really
a
fun collaboration. And then when Lori, John's wife, came in at the last year there, that was really important.
How long did you work on it before it became an actual book, hardbound?
I think probably for me it was about 4 years, and John maybe 2.5.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I should know an answer to that question, but... Yeah, he came in about two-thirds of the, you know, I really tried to start it, but
yeah.
I had a mock-up that looked about that size.
Well, we were always encouraging you over the years to do something.
Right. Yeah. It was about time to do it.
Right. Well, Scott and I we go back to, 1998, I think, is when we connected, and we worked with Patricia Johansson, who is an environmental artist. And Scott, talk about how she ended up designing the ponds for the Ellis Creek wastewater plant.
Mm-hmm.
So she was very intricate in making, because it's the salt harvest mouth is the design, and then you have an overlay of the monarch butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting story about how Pat even got to Petaluma. And Scott, why don't you go ahead and let us know? It's a great story.
I don't know. I think we knew each other on Lafferty Group before that.
No, actually, that's the first time we met was in the Lafferty Group. That's right.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I met Sherry Cardo also.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, Patricia, I met her through Chuck Jennifer, who gave me something she'd written. He just, you know, Chuck the sculptor.
Right.
Yeah. He said, I think you might be interested in this, and gave me her art and survival piece, you know, and she writes incredibly, and it really, really knocked me out. I thought, wow, this is what we want. This is the kind of vision we want in our
area. At the time, we were talking about the Corona Reach.
That's right.
And Petaluma's
where
the factory outlet is, and the city was flooding.
Yeah.
And so we were always looking at how you could actually develop this area for park, recreation, biking, and hiking instead of development that was planned, because it's like our Central Park. You know, I look at it as the New York Central Park in Petaluma.
Yeah, and she'd done things like in Japan around the rivers.
In Japan and in Dallas.
Yeah,
you know,
water. So, anyway, I was so smitten by this piece that she wrote that I called her, or, you know, and... she said, oh, that's amazing. I'm just happy to be coming through there with my sons to, like, looking at colleges, you know.
Okay.
And so she stopped in, and, yeah, we hit it up, and we went. I forgot what happened, but we started going to having meetings pretty soon with
that's
the public.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, she just has this vision about how to layer meaning and ecological significance into even harsh infrastructure projects.
Well, into functional.
Into functional flowing things.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. The Blue Lake, was it? Oh, God. Lagoon in Dallas. Oh. That's actually a flood control project that she designed. It's still there today, and people are still walking in this unbelievable landscape.
Air Park Lagoon.
Air Park Lagoon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then she, the Rocky Marciano Trail, she did that. China, she's worked in. She's around the world.
Yeah, she's a, you know, she's a pioneer in land art. And if we could highlight her contribution here in Petaluma with Ellis Creek, we might be able to land some more land artists around here doing things.
Well, that was kind of the plan.
That was
what we really wanted was to bring a world-renowned environmental artist and make a special design. And we had people from museums coming, and a lot of people mm-hmm. came and saw this, but the city did not have the foresight to actually promote this. And they've actually tried to promote it so people don't go there.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. But,
as far as touring and stuff.
I see. Oh,
yeah,
I see.
The tours. Yeah.
Well, she had a lot of artistic elements planned, bridges and pavilions and beautiful things. It would have really made it an art destination. And Sandy Reed has all those plans.
That's right.
Right now.
Yeah.
And if we, you know, but one, the harsh engineering and budgetary realities tend to grind out these nice amenities in the end, you know.
Yeah.
And push her aside a bit in that realm.
But her basic,
yeah. But she basically really helped win over the town to the idea of natural treatment ponds and designing them. And it's a beautiful, beautiful plan.
I went to a lot of those meetings, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, she really excited people. Yeah.
Yeah. And working with Bob, Bob Dyer.
Exactly.
She really liked working with Bob and you as far as the photography.
Yeah.
But Scott, you lived at the convent in town.
Yeah.
I don't know how you ended up getting a gig like that. And Patricia would stay with you. And
that's
then after the convent, then she would stay at our home.
Hmm. Yeah, that's right. I went through a divorce in 93 or something like that. And I went to Mount Shasta. I moved to Mount Shasta for a while. But it was really hard to make a living up there.
Mm-hmm. No kidding.
I thought I could, well, maybe I can get jobs at Reading or something, you know. But I'd go out and I couldn't even get back home sometimes because of the snow and stuff. So it was really impractical idea. But I love Mount Shasta.
It's beautiful up there.
I know. Yeah, powerful. When I came back here, I really needed a space, and I saw that place was empty. And I said, why don't you let me be artist in residence, you know? They were between priests at the time.
Right.
And the one guy there liked me. And then somebody on the board wanted me to be in there because it was getting vandalized.
Right. Homeless people were going in there and vandalizing.
Yes, I'd rather have this guy than... I slipped in there, and I think after that, I don't know how popular I was there.
It's where the priests and the nuns live. And it's over on Howard Street, where the grammar school is.
Yeah.
Big building, and built in 1917 or something like that.
Yeah.
I had a question about the book. Is this the first book of photos you've ever done, or have you done several ones?
I've been in other people's books, but...
This is the first one you've done.
First one, yeah.
Approximately how many images are in it?
I think there's 135. Or...
And is there a digital version of it?
No, not yet. I mean, maybe.
The reason I'm asking is because, this might sound weird, but there's such beautiful shots. They would look so great on my HD TV, just as sort of like backgrounds, you know,
Yeah, that's a good point, because they do lose a lot in the process of getting to the book page.
Well, it just would look so nice to have that, you know, in a digital form.
Yeah, I mean, we want...
Janice has to kill something that's making noise.
you have to put it...
Like my brain.
You have to put a quarter in a quarter
I know, I just touched something and started talking.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, guys.
Anyway.
We're talking about the iPad.
I know. That or my water bottle.
Yeah.
That'd be nice, Jason. I don't know, but we would like the book to continue to roll out.
It would be cool
if
you had the book. And it's just an idea. You could have maybe if you do a second edition or something, include a DVD or a link or something. Sometimes what happens now when you buy an album, for example, in the music world, you buy the album, you get the physical album, but then there's also a link to get a digital version of it or something. I don't know, just a thought.
Yeah. These kids don't even buy any music anymore at all. It's all streaming.
Yeah, it depends.
That's not true.
My kid does not like.
Yeah, no, it's true, and I'm guilty of that myself. But what artists are finding is that people are buying albums.
My granddaughter is 15, and she's buying vinyl.
Oh, vinyl, yeah.
A lot of bands now are doing vinyl because people actually buy it, and it's a little bit more challenging.
Yeah, I'm going to stop buying more vinyl.
Big fans.
It's kind of a cool against the grain thing, or, you know, against the groove, with the groove, whatever. Yeah. The idea is, you know, when something becomes too ubiquitous, it's like, wait a minute, let's go back to what we had before.
And then those end up in the landfill.
A whole question about, you know, how vinyl is produced. that's a good point.
Yeah, PVC, right?
It pretty much
is.
Exactly. Fossil fuels.
Blue vinyl. Did you ever see that film, Blue Vinyl? Did you ever go to Vioneers? Do you go to Bioneers?
I've been to Bioneers before.
Never mind. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
That's it.
Where is that? This is a vinyl place?
Bioneers. It's a big conference every year down at... three-day conference.
No. I have a huge vinyl collection.
they had a movie on me. Never mind. Okay, back.
Well, Patricia was in the Bioneers conference as a guest speaker.
Yeah.
And that's how I connected
with her. Anyway, we veered off of Patricia here.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just saying that, memories.
Again, back to the context, it was just if you'd ever decide that might be an interesting thing to have a digital edition of the book, simply because a lot of people now are enjoying images in other ways. I mean, I enjoy your images in my Facebook feed all the time. They're absolutely great.
Yeah, well, we'll think of other ways. I mean, we'd like it to, you know, go out there as much as possible.
Yeah, you also don't want to give them away. I mean, the problem with digital editions sometimes is like, oh, yeah, I'll just get the photos and then not buy the book. It's like, no, you got to buy the book.
Well, it's almost like you can actually put the book on so, you know, you can hear it. You know, do the entire book, and, you know, they can talk about the pictures, but you actually have the verbiage in there, so you could be driving and hearing.
If you ever decide you want to do that and you need any help putting it together, let me know.
Wow, that would be great.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
You're on record. Thank you.
And by next week, we'd like to see this.
Yeah.
Just a small royalty.
No, I think it's a great idea because people like to, you know, books when they're driving.
A lot of people don't read anymore.
Well, that is, you know, newspapers, everything.
Even my dad, it's like, he's like, oh, yeah, I read that. I'm like, really? You read it? Well, I mean, I heard it on, you know, he says tape, but it's like, of course, no one's using tape anymore.
Right.
Although, actually, that's making a little bit of a comeback.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. It turns out that analog tape in its highest quality form sounds really good. And so people are rediscovering that.
Oh.
Kind of funny.
Kind of makes you feel good.
Yes. So Scott, are you working full-time as a photographer? Is that how you're making your living these days? Or
what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I sell products and sell stuff for the web and all that.
Yeah, you have a website, which is Scott Hess Photo.
That was built in 1998.
I noticed that.
Come on, Scott. 2019.
I really needed Karen to. It's nice design, but.
Yeah, it's interesting because Karen does web stuff, right? Doesn't she?
Not anymore, no.
Okay.
When it got too complicated and too automated. She likes to design things.
It's gotten a lot easier with a lot of the.
Yeah, and a lot of people can do that.
A lot of the systems now, you can
I suppose I need to,
So you have two sons.
And
are they. What are they doing? And
they're very important in this whole thing, including the book, because they really anchored me here. You know, otherwise I might have explored around a little more around the bay.
Right.
But once they came, I couldn't. It really anchored me here. So shout out to them. Evan's up in Seattle. I'm working on the ferries.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, he went to Evergreen State up there, and he liked it. But he said the book did make him homesick.
I bet. Yeah. So is he trying to be a pilot on the ferries?
I guess so. Yeah, I think that's what he's doing.
Good for him. Wow.
Yeah. He likes the water.
During the Lafferty times, Evan was running around the house while we'd have this meeting. There was probably 15 people at the meeting every week. We would have a meeting to talk about Lafferty, and he was always around. And
Evan's good. He's a smart guy. He knows history. He likes history. I keep trying to tell him to write things down and take pictures as you go, you know?
Right. So is he into art like you and Karen?
Not as much art, but he's definitely into history.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
And how your second son?
Lucas. He's 11, and you know, after the pull of anchor of Evan leaving here, then Lucas came along, so there I am again, you know.
Full circle.
Yeah, Lucas is completely different. He's really extrovert, you know. Evan's very cards close to the best. Mm-hmm. Lucas is out there. So I don't know what to say about him. He's going to Waldorf school. He seems pretty happy.
Nice. Yeah, I saw that awesome picture of him with the maypole.
Oh, God.
That was cool. That was a really cool photo.
It was. I couldn't believe it. I thought I was in. It was surreal.
I know.
But
I didn't know schools did that anymore.
I know.
I didn't know this about you. I just learned this from your website. You've had a lot of your photographs featured in many publications, including The Sun magazine, Shift, Itney, Via, Shot, Smithsonian, San Francisco Chronicle, Miami magazine.
Yeah.
Bay Nature magazine, Cultural Survival magazine, and Terrain. It's impressive. And I see also that you've had your work exhibited in quite a few places, including the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco.
Yeah, I haven't really done much of it lately. That's why I'm happy to have this one up now at the Historical Museum. It's small, but it's a cool exhibit.
I haven't seen it yet. So how long is that going to be?
I shouldn't say, because you'll say, I'll go at the very end. But
it's going to end tomorrow.
It's going to end tomorrow.
No, actually, that's a good point, because I missed an exhibit because of that. It's like, oh, yeah, I have plenty of time, and then I ran out of time and missed it.
So. Put it on your Google Calendar. Anyway, it gets, I think it's June 8th. It's up until June 8th.
Okay.
That library is only open from Thursday through Sunday, 10 to 4.
Okay.
But it's you know, I'm happy with that exhibit.
How many works?
Maybe 30 or 40. But there's some big pieces, big canvases. And we have our panorama, 360-degree panorama that we shot over Sonoma Mountain. It's really worth going to.
When you say canvas, it's like a digital print on a canvas? Or?
Yeah, I mean bigger things.
Okay.
Canvases, yeah. But this panorama is 10 feet long.
Wow.
And it is from 400 feet over Bonnie Matsui's old ranch is where we launched from.
Right, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah, Sonoma Mountain Ranch, 400 feet up. Then we went all around in a circle. That's another collaboration.
Do you use a drone to do that?
Yeah, I collaborate with Jesse Kaltenbach. That's Kathleen Hanna's son, for anybody that knows Kathleen, who designed many art shows.
I don't even like calling them drones. That's what typically they're called, but it sort of has military connotations to it. But
They're called
aerial photographic devices.
Well, they're a total double-edged sword. I mean, you know.
Like, privacy,
like anything. I mean, they can deliver medicine. Yeah. They can catch poachers.
Has anything unusual ever shown up in any of your works that way? Like, oh boy, look what was going on there in that backyard. Or
not really. Like, we're usually out in the landscape.
It's out in the country. Yeah. Nothing over downtown.
Any marijuana pills? That's where he's going.
Nudist colonies.
I haven't seen anything that's spicy or unusual, think. But it's definitely an exhilarating perspective up there.
Are you watching it in real time and going, snap now? You're calling the shots, literally?
Yeah, we both have iPads, Jesse and I. It's an amazing collaboration. He's really a good drone pilot. And I use it for this book. I would say, you know, we need a shot here from this angle. For the book, and he has his own thing.
Now, this is a serious size unit. This is something you probably have to have a license for, correct?
He does have a license. You know. It's bigger than a DJI or something.
Right.
You know.
Nice.
Means
you can run it in windier conditions, too.
It's stable. That was the first thing that surprised me, how stable it is.
All those gyros.
Amazing. They lock. It's like a tripod up there.
I mean, the technology, just within the last 5 years, has just gone nuts. It's only a matter of time before we have microscopic little bugs flying around with cameras that we don't even know about.
Brave
new world.
Exactly. Yep. But we compose on these iPads, and we usually shoot around 360 and take a chunk of it. But for this this beautiful panorama at sunrise coming up over. So I hope to see it.
So I was going to ask
to journey down.
See, I was
over coffee at Acre.
I was always told that the lighting around dusk or right before dusk is kind of optimal for photography. Is that?
Well, where the sun is low, it's going to rake across the land and make the forms pop out rather than noon or something, you know, which flattens everything out. But, you know, it's also dusty, and sunrise is just as good. Oh.
What's your advice for aspiring photographers?
Just to do it.
Just do it.
Just start taking pictures of stuff you like, you know.
Don't even worry about how you're going to make a living doing it. Just do it.
Yeah, you can't. Now the game's changing so much, it's hard to predict.
Yeah.
But the thing is, developing a visual language is very useful.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Facebook's been incredible for me, because I can put out images constantly.
Yeah, you do, man.
That's great, because I was making them constantly for years, but didn't have anywhere to put them out.
You get up pretty early, too, sometimes, it seems. A lot of, like, early morning shots.
For me, going out and looking at things is my TV. I don't really watch TV.
Good for you.
I don't know anything about what's going on in Game of Thrones or anything.
What is that?
I haven't watched
it. I feel a little weird not having seen Game of Thrones, because I feel like I'm missing all of these cultural references.
Yeah.
And
not me. I don't have time.
Everyone's talking about it. I'm like, I don't even know what it is. I mean, I vaguely know what it is. But
yeah. But I do like the visual, you know, getting out and looking at things. It seems joyous.
And it's inspiring, because every time I see your pictures, it reminds me to get the heck out of my house and enjoy the beautiful scenery that we have in this county. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, that's
especially this time of year. I mean, when it's all green, this is my favorite.
I see.
Some people love the golden, whatever I call it, brown. I like the green.
A lot of people are starting, to get hit with allergies now, though. That's the only thing.
I'm amazed. Every year, my allergies have been horrible. So far, for some weird reason, I've been lucky. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something, maybe it just hasn't hit me yet.
Very good. You're meant to get out there more and more.
Seriously, though, I my eyes are typically burning. Yeah. I'm sneezing, and so far this
now's
year
your window to get out there.
I'm not noticing. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's like I've got 2 weeks or something. And, then it's worse.
Yeah.
Well, I want to remind folks that you're listening to KPCA 103.3 FM right here in Petaluma, Petaluma's homegrown radio station, and we are visiting with our guest Scott Hess today. And we were talking earlier before you got here, Scott, about the technology that Apple has come up with, their these cameras on the iPhones.
Yeah.
Do you ever use phone?
Yeah. They're very good for close-ups, too. And they're really good in broad daylight. They're really good. You know, the way they struggle a little when the light levels fall off. But
apparently the new models improve that a little bit.
Yeah. I like to get the latest iPhone just for the camera, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So do you ever do what you would consider, like, professional shots just with an iPhone?
There's a shot in that book.
There is.
Petaluma Boulevard, a pan. There's an iPhone pan of Petaluma Boulevard in the book.
Yeah. Oh, really? And is there only one? It'd be interesting to see if actually people would notice the difference.
Well, I won't. You would comment because yes, you can tell the difference.
You can tell
I kind of want to go back to the butter and egg parade
which is tomorrow,
and Scott Hess got the Good Egg Award.
Yeah.
So there
I should talk about John a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think Ben, his researching, he's every now and then a question comes up, somebody challenges or something. He's always right.
I know.
He's always and he's got documents to back it up, you know. Yeah. So he's a great researcher and a great storyteller, and it's a great combination.
So how did you two connect? Well, before the book, or what brought you together?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but we were wherever each other, and we did do stuff, and I knew he was into history. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out.
Well, he's going to be on the show one of these days.
Oh, good. He'll tell you.
And, you know, we can maybe have the two of you together or separately, but it would be great to know more about John, what his background is.
Oh, he's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, he goes way back in this community, his family.
Yeah, and not only that, his publishing thing is very interesting.
Right, right.
I mean, his first job was Parabola magazine, which is a very lofty, mythological, beautiful publication.
Yeah. Now, is the 2019 Good Eggs, will you and John be riding in the parade?
Yeah, we're going to be in a mustard-colored car of some kind, Chevy of some kind.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have a bubble machine. I'm trying to work on it. As soon as I leave this studio, I'm going to try to get a portable battery to run the bubble machine. I'll be very disappointed if I don't get it.
You know who could probably find somebody that has one is Mo down at the Mail Depot. She
really?
Knows everybody, and she's just
I should have started
resource.
There. I should have started.
Yeah. Well, you better get on it because you don't have
time.
I know.
We didn't think about it until yesterday. So
tell us about the Good Egg Award. What is the Good Egg Award? And what was the celebration last week at the library? And also kind of go into, I want to know a little bit more. Well, we'll get into the library after.
The Good Egg Award is, the first one was Adair Haig, right, who did the book. Her beautiful book, well-researched book. So it seems to me that the Good Egg is for people that focus on the town, you know, because there's a lot of forces that would take our imagination and mind away, you know, media and easy travel, cheap travel. So those are Good Egg seem to be people that focus on the bring it all back home, you know.
Nice.
So that's what our book does, too.
Yeah, well, you were a great contributor in this town since you've come here. I mean, you jumped right in, you know, with a lot of creative people. And it's a joy just having you here.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
You've been involved in a lot of efforts to advance sustainability. And there's a mention here on your website. There was also an activist aspect to Scott's work, weaving art and ecology together in ways that inspire and inform and contribute to the practical advance of a green, sustainable culture. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that was kind of early on. I took more of that, but, you know, other people came along that did that part so much better, like Trathan and stuff. I was trying to, like, keep a foot in every door, keep it going.
But you've been very involved. Yeah. I remember you were involved with Schoenberger.
To
keep an asphalt plant.
Well, no, I have a heart for nature. I mean, that's the thing about this show and the book, too. It starts with nature and the big ancient landscape, and then it works its way down into our little creation.
It's incredibly inspiring stuff that you do. I love this quote from you. It says, "I see photography as a way to penetrate and appreciate the moment and as a way to convey spiritual meanings and values embedded in our awesome world. I also use photography to explore my own mind and perceptions and bring unexpected aspects of the individual and collective psyche to light."
Jeez.
Great quote.
You said that, John?
He's like, wait a minute. How did I come up with that? That was from the acid.
Oh.
Back in Woodstock. The brown days.
But it's true, though. I mean, you look at this and...
I don't want people to glom onto that.
No, but it's inspiring. When you see inspiring beauty, it does make you take pause about the need to appreciate and protect it.
I think that's kind of an interesting thing about Petaluma and, you know, meeting you for the first time. It was really about the environment, making water better. It was about hiking, biking, preserving areas that are really historical to our community and to actually build upon that. And it's been, you know, 25 years later, people are finally coming to grips that this is really a good way to go. You know, when the wastewater plant was being done, it was adding 2 miles of trails. And so it was this incremental steps to awakening people. But Petaluma has come a long way in 25 years. And it was people like Scott and many other people that promoted the beauty of the community. And, you know, there were a lot of fights, you know, to stop things also, such as, I mean, the asphalt plant, you know, I haven't been involved in that as much as you have, but all the beauty that came, and a lot of it when Patricia came, and we really sat down and started looking at the benefits for the community, and it was kind of shut down, and now it's moving forward, you know, with the smart train and the trails, and you just want to keep moving forward to have these amenities so everybody can see the beauty. Most people have never even been up the Petaluma River. And if you can't walk the rail tracks anymore because the train's there. But before, you could walk the rail tracks, and you just saw this incredible scenery that most people have never even seen, and it is a real gem.
We're not recommending that people walk on the rail tracks.
No, they should not.
No, they should not. Ride the train, and you can see it.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, but once you hit a certain part, you veer off, and you're not seeing the river.
You can get in a boat.
Yeah. Don't walk the tracks.
Well, you can get it. Yeah, you just watch the tide, and you go up there with kayaks, and that's one thing that is really exciting, is that Petaluma is becoming a recreational area, and it's, you know, I'm not really into the motorboats coming up.
No.
You know, I'd like to kind of see that the bridge doesn't go up anymore.
Human power.
And I'd rather have the human power and get into kayaking, making sure that we have actually areas so people can kayak up the river, and that you have actually camping areas that are safe for people to be in. And we have those opportunities, like McNair Island would be a perfect place.
Well, for the Petaluma River, they're moving ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's an important piece of property right there.
You can get boats on the weekend there. So they're actually available.
Well, I think it's a real economic engine when you start promoting this type of a vacation or an experience.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the people, like the boats that people come up in, it's not the same experience as when you're actually seeing, you're able to go up, you know, half a mile up the up the river. It's quite beautiful.
When the tide is up.
Yeah. I mean, there's areas where they have sand areas that you can walk into. It's hard to get down to these areas because you have to really trek into some crazy areas. But there's all kinds of shellfish down there. There's clams down there, oysters down there. I mean, it's really quite an ecosystem we have.
Kayaking's a great way to go, too, because you can get into really tight spaces pretty easily.
That's right.
And if you get into the marshes, you know, near and around Schollenberger and beyond, it really is it's an experience. I mean, you're going through, and it's like, oh, wow, you're surrounded by all this.
You guys all do that?
Oh, I do.
I did that with David Yearsley, and amazing. Awesome.
I was a member of the rowing club for a little while.
Oh, really?
And I stopped doing that because the weather was bad. I was traveling, and maybe someday I'll get back into it. They're beautiful. They're great, but and they go very fast. But the problem is you have to have a wide space to use them. So a kayak is actually more navigable.
Mm-hmm. Hard to turn those around.
Exactly.
I mean, what's so amazing is if you go down to, you know, Marin, you know, Highway 37, and you start from Black Point, and you start going up the river, up or down, I mean, you can end up, you know, well past the factory outlet. And it is quite an experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my cousin Elliot Barless, he's a wild young man, and he's a kayaker. Mm-hmm. And he has photos that I've seen and videos coming down the Petaluma River where the Washington Creek and the Upper Reach meets. Mm-hmm. It can be pretty torrential down there with the, and you just see him, and he's just having this great time experiencing the river. And most people don't realize it's even there.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Being on the water is fun. And, you know, you can rent those paddle boards here where you stand up. The first time I saw that, it was the weirdest thing. I'm like, how are these people standing on the river? Yeah. Oh, I get it. They're on a board.
Well, a few weeks ago, there was something in the Argus, and it was talking about, you know, like a boat area.
It's going to be a float house.
Like a float house.
There's going to be two, actually. There's one that's going to be in the Turning Basin, and then there's a larger one that's going to be further
That's your Pomeroy.
Yeah. Exactly. That's going to be larger.
I wish there was a little place for houseboats around here.
That would be great.
Oh, that
too,
would be fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, you better start slow because
I know. I said that softly.
You said that very softly. I'm like, oh my God, you know, I can just see the hairs on some people.
I have a question.
Go slow.
I think I may know the answer, but it's an interesting one. I've seen a lot of people, visual artists, who start with still photography migrate into video. And I'm wondering if that's ever something that you get into or if it's something you've done and I'm just not aware of it. But I'm just curious because some people are like, no, it's always still. And then some people start with still and they also get into video. I don't know.
I did get into video a bit in the past and then I went around videoing everybody I thought was like David Brower and Gary's poets and artists and stuff. Video, but and I noticed on their drone when we do video up there, it really is much more effective than stills in that the you see the depth of the land much better. The only problem is, you know, it's hard to keep deploying it. You know what I mean?
Because of the size of the
project. Well, you watch it, and then it's over, and you go do something else, and then...
Oh, well, that's why you have to have it on a loop.
Okay, that's correct. That's the trick.
All right, some new displays.
Wow, that was quick. Yeah. 5 minutes left.
So, quickly about Lafferty. Yeah. Where are we at with Lafferty? Are you part of team?
No, not like Matt.
Okay.
Not really. Okay. Knows it inside and out. Yeah, I just went up there with him, but then he was explaining it to everybody, except I was off.
I was at a party at Mary McChesney's last weekend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and Mary is...
What's she doing?
Mary is in a rest home where she's not doing well.
Yeah.
But it was a great party, and it was honoring Mary because there was some elder abuse going on with her.
Oh.
And so there were some of us that got together and started looking at these papers. She was selling her place to somebody, and it just smelled bad.
Just so... I understand, and the listeners understand. Is this the owner of the Lafferty Ranch?
No, Mary McChesney and her husband own a piece of property of 2 acres on the Sonoma Mountain.
Okay.
They're bohemians. I mean, they're artists. I mean, well-known artists.
Yeah,
Mac McChesney and then Mary Fuller McChesney.
I gotcha.
And so, so people were trying to get her property, and it just didn't look like a good contract. So myself and somebody else, we got an attorney to look at it. And it was actually Les Perry's law firm that took this on for this couple down in L.A. And we went to, we had to do depositions. And it was pretty amazing that these people, after 3 years, walked away. Because it was true elder abuse of getting somebody to sign away their property. And, you know, we're really proud that if that didn't happen, so there was this celebration. At her,
beautiful.
At her place, and I'm sorry I didn't contact you, but we'll go up there again.
Yeah, that would have been.
But
would have been great.
Lafferty, this is a park that the city owns, but the access has been difficult to obtain because a property owner nearby.
Well, it was actually in 1959, I think the city bought it. It's called the Lawler Water System, and it provided water for. 10,000 residents in Petaluma.
I just want our listeners to know what the hell we're talking about.
So it was actually bought for a watershed. And then it got to be that that was shut down.
Right.
Unfortunately. Politics shut the water system down. And then a property owner on the hill, Peter Fendler, wanted to buy that. And another part of the story is just going back and... saving the water rights. There was myself and 2 other people went to Sacramento, and we sued to save the water rights, and the state now owns those rights.
But the big controversy was that they were not letting people have access to the property.
And they're saying it's still a block. It's still controversial.
Exactly.
But it'll be an interesting conversation to talk at another time, because there's a whole history.
That is the Dover Creek watershed, folks, Lafferty Ranch.
So how do you get there if access isn't legal? This is one of the reasons I've never gone. No one's ever gone with me to take me there. I don't know.
Trespassing.
Yeah, trespassing. Actually, it's not trespassing because the city has access to the land, but they're saying there's like a little swath that you can't walk, 10 feet to go over.
Somebody going to get shot or anything?
Well, I'm really cautious.
Probably not. I mean, if someone tags your car and says you can't, but so far they don't. I mean,
Bruce.
There's just no trails.
Right. Exactly.
De Kramer, he takes people.
I have to go. I have never been up
there. No, there's photos in the book. Yeah.
It's an amazing piece of property.
That's the only way I've enjoyed it, through photos and videos.
Yeah. It's quite amazing.
Beautiful up there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to be the buzzkill person here.
Yeah.
The timekeeper.
Well, it has to happen. All great things.
Yeah, it'll have to happen. But we just have maybe less than 5 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we... plug the KPCA benefit concert, which is going to be held Monday, May 20th at Lagunitas Brewery, and it's benefiting KPCA. That's us. We need money to operate, and so you get a $20 ticket in advance or $25 at the door. That's for adults, and kids 12 and under are $10 in advance and $15 at the door. And that price includes entertainment by our own DJ Saeed, who's going to spin some vinyl for a bit. And then following that will be The Grain.
Mm.
And the price also includes dinner, which will be catered by Senor Sisig, which is a renowned food truck from San Francisco.
I'm getting hungry right now.
Yeah, and 20 bucks for all that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, mark your calendars. Monday, May 20th. Mo down at the Petaluma Mail Depot has tickets. You can get them there, or you can go online at kpca.fm.
Check the bubble machine. I'll buy my tickets.
And then you can get your tickets at the same time. We'd appreciate that.
That would be great. Yeah. So, mark your calendars. May 20th. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, good. I'm going to the Giants game tonight.
Me too.
7 o'clock game.
Me too.
Yeah, carpool.
You want a carpool?
I'm going with Lucas, meeting Julie Brewer. You know Julie? She's a classmate of yours, isn't she?
Oh, here we go. We only have like 2 minutes
okay,
left.
Sorry, folks.
It's a blank.
And then the other thing, it's a big weekend in Petaluma. Yeah. We've got the Butter and Egg Day Parade tomorrow. It starts at noon.
Yeah. Oh, and Sunday is Mentor Me Bocce Ball Tournament.
And PCA has also a presence at the Butter and Egg
Day. Yes, Petaluma Community Access videotapes the parade every year, and then they put it on Channel 26, or I can't remember what AT&T U-verse channel it is, but it's on TV if you don't have satellite.
You can sure to sit there and watch 116 floats go by a second time.
way better to get down there and watch. There's they say that there's 30,000 people that attend this every year.
And it's going to be a perfect day.
Zoom. Yeah, it's going to be a perfect
great day.
You should string all the tapes together and play it in the Art Center.
Oh, man.
Looping.
Yes.
20 years of Butter and Egg.
God, that would be interesting. My kids were in the Butter and Egg Day parade doing flip-flops with Redwood Empire Gymnastics down, the boulevard.
It took me so long to realize it was Butter and Egg singular, not Butter and Eggs.
Oh, that's true.
Day. Oh, and it's always plural.
And then, the fun doesn't end there. There's also an antique there if you're not going to go to the bocce ball. Antique fair.
I'm on the mayor's team.
From 8 to 4 on Sunday. Good. And that's downtown as well. So.
We have a lot going on.
A lot going on. Thank you very much, Scott,
Thank
for
you.
Being here.
Thank you.
Don't be afraid to come back. We'll have you and John back.
It sounds so nice.
Keep up the great work.
Yeah.
We love seeing it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Everybody have a good weekend. See you later.
Yeah.
Bye.